Thank you. divine grace of the Abhijanavinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Guru Pemanandi Hare Krishna. So, good morning. Hare Krishna, welcome. It's nice to see everybody here this morning. So we normally start our classes with reading from the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, which is the biography of Srila Prabhupada. And this particular volume is it's volume 2, entitled Planting the Seed, which describes Prabhupada's preaching activities in New York, 1965-1966. So it was the formation of his new society, it was the very beginnings. So always interesting little anecdotes from that time. And interesting characters that would come to the movement. By their own admission, too, sometimes the early devotees would describe what they were doing, what they were like at the time, and you're like, wow. Like Damodar Maharaj, he used to be known as Prabhupada Das. He's actually described in this book as Lon Solomon. Lon Solomon. And he was like a wild hippie kid, guy with like a big hat and, you know, on LSD, you know, the whole thing. So he just describes how merciful Prabhupada was at that time. You know, Prabhupada, you know, he was dealing with broken toys. How to put it, but, you know, he was dealing with a youth that was fed up with materialistic culture and were trying to seek something deeper. And so they would then, of course, dive into sort of a hedonistic lifestyle. And so in the one sense, they didn't want, you know, the materialistic consumer culture of their parents, but they also were not, you know, they were fed up with the hippie alternative. So anyway, I'll read this because I think it's... Sasrit Maharaj does a better job describing it than I do. Yeah. So Michael Grant is speaking, and he's Mukunda Maharaj. He's now Mukunda Swami. I first heard about the initiation just one day before it was to take place. I had been busy with my music and hadn't been attending. I was walking down 2nd Avenue with one of the prospective initiates, and he mentioned to me that there was going to be something called an initiation ceremony. I asked what it was about, and he said, "All I know is it means you're supposed to accept the spiritual master as God." This was a big surprise to me, and I hardly knew how to take it. But I didn't take it completely seriously, and the way it was mentioned to me was such an offhand way, it made it seem not very important. He asked me very casually whether I was going to be involved, and I, also being very casual about it, said, "Well, I'll think about it. I think I will. Why not? I'll give it a try." Jan didn't think that you'd be making an obedient disciple. Jan didn't think that she would make an obedient disciple. An initiation sounded frightening. She liked the Swami, especially cooking for him, but it was Mike who convinced her. He was going, so she should come along with him. Carl Jurgens knew something about initiation from his readings, and he, more than others, knew what a serious commitment it was. He was surprised to hear that Swamiji was offering initiations, and he was cautious about entering into it. He knew that initiation meant no illicit sex, intoxication, nor meat eating, and an initiated disciple would have new responsibilities for spreading the teachings to others. Carl was already feeling less involved since the Swami had moved to 2nd Avenue, but he decided to attend the initiation anyway. Bill Epstein had never professed to be a serious disciple. Holding initiation was just another part of Swami's scene, and you were free to take it seriously or not. He figured it was all right to take initiation, even if he weren't serious, he would try it. Carl Becker was surprised to hear that some people would be taking initiation even though they had no intentions of giving up their bad habits. She had stopped coming around regularly ever since the Swami had moved, and she felt no desire to ask for initiation. The Swami probably wouldn't be initiating women anyway, she figured. Robert Nelson hadn't forgotten the Swami had always liked to help whenever he could. But except for the occasional friendly visit, he had stopped coming. He mostly stayed to himself. He lived uptown and wasn't into the Lower East Side scene. James Green thought he wasn't pure enough to be initiated. Who am I to be initiated? But the Swami had asked him to bring something over to the storefront. I came, and it was understood that I was supposed to be initiated. So I thought, why not? Stanley had been chanting regularly again and had come out of his crazy mood. He was sticking with the Swami and his followers. He asked his mother if he could be initiated, and she said it would be all right. And it's nice, because that's actually proper culture. You know, normally before someone accepts initiation, you ask permission from your parents. So if the parents give you blessings, then you can go. I remember even that, I don't even know, I know the Hermann Hesse book, Siddhartha, was loosely based on the life of the Buddha, but apparently he wanted to enter spiritual life. His father wouldn't say yes, so he would just sleep at his father's door, day in and day out, until his father gave his blessings. But you find this in Vedic culture, in Hindu culture, that the child would go to the parents and say, I would like to be initiated by this person, and the parent would give their blessings or not. So it's nice that he asked his mother. It shows some culture in his family part. Steve wanted more time to think about it. Keith was in the hospital. Bruce had only been attending for a week or two, and it was too soon. Chuck was on a week's vacation from the regulated spiritual life at the temple, so he didn't know about the initiation. I was at a class with Jadurani, who's also known as Shyamarani, who was one of their also early disciples. A lot of the paintings you see here in the temple were painted by her, or she was on a team that painted them. She was one of the early artists of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, or at that time was the ISKCON Press. and she had a story where, you know, nobody really knew much about the culture, and devotees were not dressing in devotional clothing, you know, dhotis and saris and so forth. And so she thought, for her first initiation, and she was describing really in her memoirs how encouraging Prabhupada was. And so she decided that she wanted to dress in her best clothes for the initiation. She didn't want to dress slovenly. So she got her best black tight blue jeans, her black turtleneck sweater, and, you know, makeup, you know, the whole thing. And she was like, that for her was like showing up. And Prabhupada gave her initiation, didn't say anything about the clothing, didn't say anything about whatever, just gave her the beads, gave her her name, so forth. And Prabhupada was like that. He just met people where they were. You know, if someone wants to cross a river, and, you know, you can just tell them, okay, walk, but at some point, you know, they're on a rock somewhere in the middle of the river, it helps to go out, meet them where they are, and help them rest the way in, you know. And so Prabhupada, his godbrothers had tried to preach in the West also. Bhakti Hridoy Bhan Maharaj went to England, and he decided that he was only going to preach to very high class aristocratic Europeans, Lord Zetland, and so forth. And he talked about, you know, Brahman initiation. And they said, well, what does it mean to be Brahman initiated? He said, well, there's no meat eating, there's no gambling, there's no tasteless sex, there's no intoxication. There's, you know, these are the regular principles, you know, the Brahmana means, you know, one is truthful, one is merciful, one is austere, and one is pure. You know, these are the four pillars of religious life. And when he told this to Lord Zetland, the only words came out of his mouth was impossible. So So there was this gap that was there. There was the Vedic Vaishnava culture, you know, and there was sort of the European culture of enjoyment, of sense gratification. Nowhere was there going to be a gap. So when Prabhupada first came to America, you know, in his poem, he said, the population here is covered by the modes of material of ignorance and passion. How will they understand? This is such a sublime thing. In order to understand Krishna consciousness, one has to be very pure. One should not have any attachment to any lower thing. One should, you know, because it takes a finer refinement, higher intelligence, subtle taste. I said, I don't know how I'm going to convince them. He said, but you are the supreme mystic, Krishna. So somehow make my words powerful, suitable for their understanding. Somehow let the vibration of my words enter into their hearts. And so Prabhupada was very merciful with his early disciples, not only for the cultural differences, but also because they were in a very different place in their mentality. But it was really Prabhupada's dedication, his love, his persistence, and his own integrity. You know, and that's the thing that convinced, if you talk to early disciples of Prabhupada, they said that's the thing about Prabhupada that convinced them, was that he was genuine. It was his integrity. It was his own person that they saw, they experienced Krishna. You know, when Prabhupada spoke, there was a natural authority to it. Like that very famous story, the father wants his son to stop eating so much sugar. So he takes him to the local vaidya, to the Ayurvedic doctor, and he says, I want you to stop my son from eating so much sugar. What can you do? He said, come back in 2 weeks. So the father comes back in 2 weeks to his son, and the doctor says, stop eating sugar. Stop eating so much sweets. And the father said, you could have said that 2 weeks ago. What did you need? He said, well, 2 weeks ago, I was also eating sweets. So if I told him to stop eating sweets, there'd be no effect. So I needed to give up eating sweets. And then once I had done so, then my words would have some effect. So the Acharya is not only one who actually has transcendental knowledge in terms of what he's read and so forth, but Acharya means one who leads by example. So we say Prabhupada is our Acharya, but it was really Prabhupada's example that everybody modeled themselves after. You know, he's one, if he said you should do like this, you knew he should do like this because he was also doing like this. There is no separate set of rules that Prabhupada set aside for himself than he did for his disciples. He says, as I am doing, you should also do. So this was how Prabhupada, and his purity, it said that for a devotee, one who chants the holy name, they're a devotee. He said, one who's always chanting the holy name purely, they're a good devotee. But for one whose very presence inspires others to take up chanting, they're the best devotee. And that's who Prabhupada was. Prabhupada was his best Uttama Adhikar. He was his highest personality because his very presence inspired others and changed their hearts. You know, their minds, their hearts were elsewhere. But Prabhupada actually infused in them this idea that the goal of human life is to love God. And that's the only real reason why we're here. Everything else is secondary. So perhaps we'll start reading the Srimad Bhagavatam now. Thank you for... Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we'll be reading from the fifth canto, chapter 9, verse 5, which describes the activities of Jada Bharata. We're reading 4? Oh, okay. I was told we're reading 5. Okay. Sure. Okay, thank you. So we know all the story of Bharata, yes. So he was a very powerful king, whom India is still named after. You look on the rupee note, Bharata is still on there. And he gave up everything to become a sadhu, to become a devotee of Lord Vishnu. But he saved a baby deer from drowning and became very attached to that deer. So much so that as he was dying, all he could think of was his deer. He had forgotten his sadhana, he had forgotten about God. So then he takes a birth as a deer. But because he had so much, he had done so much service, had was so elevated in his previous life, he was in the body of a deer, but he could, had intelligence of a human. And he could remember, oh, I'm not supposed to be in this body of a deer. I made a big mistake. I gave up everything only to become a deer, to take a lower form. So then he took shelter at ashrams. He left his pack of family deer and went to the ashram and got mercy from the devotees there. So then he took birth again as a human, as a son of a brahmana. And Jada means that he's dull. And so he had full intelligence. He was fully cognizant. He had all capacity. But he was afraid of wrong association again. So much so that even though he was born into a family of brahmanas, he did not want to associate with them too much. Why? Because they were not devotees. They were brahmana, but they were not Vaishnava. So therefore, he wanted to not associate so much. So he pretended to be very dull-minded. He pretended to be Jada. You know, his father would say, you know, wash your hands after, you know, wash yourself after you evacuate. So then he washed himself and then evacuate. His father would try to teach him mantras. He would never learn. So this is where we're picking up now. He's taken his birth into a brahmana family, and he's just not playing the game. So I'll read the Sanskrit because it's a very long verse. So I'll read the Sanskrit, then we'll read the verse-for-verse and the text together. Tasya pihava atmajasya vipapuja sneha bandhubada mana asambhartanat sankarshanyato padesham vidhadana upanitasya chapuna sochachandanahin karmaniyam anabipretam apisam siskachayat anushishtena hi bhavyam putta putreniti. So we'll read the word for words together. Tasya of him. Apihava. Certainly. Atmajasya of his son. Vipra. The Brahmana father of Jada Bharata. Mad crazy Bharata. Putra Sneha Anubadamanaha. Putra Sneha Anubadamanaha. Who was obliged by affection for his son. Asana Avartanat. Until the end of the Brahmacharya ashram. Samskaran, the purificatory processes. Sorry. Yata upadesham, as prescribed in the Shastras. Vidadanaha, performing. Upanitasya, of one who has the sacred thread. Cha, also. Puna, again. Socha achaman adin. Practice of cleanliness, washing of the mouth, legs and hands, etc. Atmaniyaman. The regulative principles of root of activities. Ani bi pretanapi. Although not wanted by Jada Bharata. Samashikshashat. Oh, sorry. taught. Anushishtena. Taught to follow the regulative principles. He, indeed. Bhavyam should be. Pituhu, from the father. Putrena, the son. Iti, thus. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Abhay Trinivinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Purport. The Brahmana father's mind was always filled with affection for his son, Jatabharta Maharaj. Therefore, he was always attached to Jatabharta. Because Jatabharta was unfit to enter the Grihastha ashram, he simply executed the purificatory process up to the end of Brahmacharya ashram. Although Jatabharta was unwilling to accept his father's instructions, the Brahmana nonetheless instructed him on how to keep clean and how to wash, thinking that the son should be taught by the father. So we'll read together. The Brahmana's father's mind was always filled with affection for his son, Jatabharta or Bharta Maharaj. Therefore, he was always attached to Jatabharta. Because Jatabharta was unfit to enter the Grihastha ashram, he simply executed the purificatory process up to the end of Brahmacharya ashram. Although Jatabharta was unwilling to accept his father's instructions, the Brahmana nonetheless instructed him on how to keep clean, how to wash, thinking that the son should be taught by the father. Purport. Jatabharta was Bharta Maharaj in the body of the Brahmana, and he outwardly conducted himself as if he were dull, deaf, dumb, and blind. Actually, he was quite alert within. He knew perfectly well the results of fruitive activity and the results of devotional service. In the body of the Brahmana, Maharaj Bharta was completely absorbed in devotional service within. Therefore, it was not at all necessary for him to execute the regulative principles of fruitive activity. As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Svanu Shitasya Dharmasya Samsidhir Hari Toshanam. One has to satisfy Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the perfection of the regulative principles of fruitive activities. Besides that, it is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma svanusita pumsam vishvakshena katashroyaha natpayodad yadi ratim shama eva kevalam. Duties or dharma executed by men, regardless of occupation, are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. These karmakanda activities are required as long as one has not developed Krishna consciousness. If one is not developed in Krishna consciousness, there is no need to execute prior regulative principles of karmakanda. Sri Madhavendra Puri said, O regulative principles of karmakanda, please excuse me. I cannot follow all these regulative principles, for I am fully engaged in devotional service. He expressed the desire to sit somewhere beneath a tree and continue chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Consequently, he did not execute all the regulative principles. Similarly, Haridas Thakur was born into a Mohammedan family. From the very beginning of his life, he was never trained in the Karmakanda system. But because he was always chanting the holy name of the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as Namacharya, the authority in chanting the holy name. as Jetabharta, Bharta Maharaj was always engaged in devotional service within his mind. Since he had executed the regulator principles continuously for three lives, he was not interested in continuing to execute them, although his Brahmana father wanted him to. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Slakaya Chakshu Unmulitamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lagaiti Girim Yakri Patamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sari Gora Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So here we have a little instruction about the relationship of different regulative processes that are found in the Veda. Shruti, Smriti, Puraniti, Panchartika, Vidhim, Vida. Aikanti Hari Bhaktir Upate Vika Kalpate. That devotional service, which is done whimsically and not under accordance to the injunctions of Shastra, Shruti, Smriti, the Vedas, Puranas, Puranidhi, Pancharatika system, if they're executed simply by one's own whim, then it simply causes a disturbance. And oftentimes, the Shruti and Smriti. Shruti means the original Veda. Smriti, that is which is remembered. Like Bhagavad Gita is considered to be a Smriti literature. And that the system of regulator of being trained is known as Vedic system. And it requires that one not only be born into a Brahmana family, but the parents perform the Garbhadana samskar prior to one's conception. Mother and father go to a temple, and a priest performs a ceremony. And by that, they invite an elevated soul to come into the mother's womb. Otherwise, any soul may come according to one's own karma. You have the mother's karma, the father's karma, and then you have the karma of the individual. And if the three are compatible, then the individual will enter extra to the father by means of grain and then into the mother. So if one is to actually claim to be a Brahmana, they must be first conceived in that way. And then, as mentioned here, there are different samskars that a child undergoes, purificatory processes. So oftentimes, you know, there'll be like a first grains here in the temple. There'll be the first cutting of the hair, first letters, you know, all these different rites of passage that a child goes through. And then at the end, the upavita, samskar. The child is given, the son is given a sacred thread by the father. But that's not the end. That's just brahmachari. Then, you know, the child then, or at that point he's a young man, accepts initiation from guru, from the spiritual master. And that is the Pancharatrika system of initiation, pancha samskar. So first given is a tapa samskar. So the symbols of Lord Vishnu are placed on the body, sometimes by branding, sometimes by sandalwood paste. That's our sampradaya. Some sampradayas do branding. We actually do sandalwood paste. sometimes some rugged, tough devotee will get tattoos, but sandalwood paste. And also a vow that you'll follow the fast days of, you know, of Jamnashtami and Ekadashi and so forth. Then there's Pundra Samskar. You're given the marking of your guru. So you notice in different Vaishnava sampradayas, there's different styles of tilak. In Sri Sampradaya, there's the U's, the Y's. Madhava Sampradaya is very wide tilak. So ours, we have our style of tilak. So that's Punda. You're given the tilak in the sampradaya. Tapa, puntra, then there's nam. Nam means that you're given a name. Shamrupa Das, Chetamayi Das, Dinatarini Das, Dasi, so forth. And then there's mantra diksha. You're given mantra by your guru. You're given your japa mantra, you're given Gayatri mantra, mantras for worshipping, so forth. And then lastly is yagya samskar. You're trained to actually how to perform worship, how to perform samskar. So this pancha samskar system is also the panchatka system that the child then undergoes. And then, of course, there's marriage ceremonies and all these different other rites of passage and so forth. And then, of course, your final rites as before you take your final breath. And then, of course, there's the shraddha ceremony that after we leave our bodies and our bodies are cremated, hopefully our sons and daughters are pious enough to hold shraddha ceremony so that we continue to elevate. And that's for the soul that's departed. We can, you know, there's some systems, and you hear some of these stories that fathers become very anxious that they don't have a son, because if they don't have a son, no one will perform a shraddha for them. And if they don't have performed shraddha for them, you know, they'll go into a lower level of consciousness. So his father would only perform the rites of passage to samskar for brahmachari, because he was behaving in such a way that he couldn't even function as a householder. There's no way he could have a family. No way could he maintain a wife. Couldn't even maintain himself. He was probably completely dependent on others, not knowing his son's internal mood. Not knowing his son's internal mood, that he actually had surpassed all the regulative processes and was completely absorbed in pure devotional service. Completely absorbed in the worship of Krishna, in his heart, in his mind. His consciousness was elevated to a point of beyond the karmakanda activity. Karmakanda means that which elevates one's consciousness to the heavenly platform. There is karmakanda means that in this lifetime I may be in this particular position, I can't do much about it, but maybe next life I'll go to the regions of Svarloka or some heavenly planet. But his son didn't even want to go there. If his son was offered to go to the planet of Indra or Gandharva Loka or any of the other higher lokas, he would have nothing to do with it. Simply at this point he understood that even if I engage in these activities and I go to the heavenly planets, I'm still bound. I was a king in a previous life, a very powerful king, wealth, power, all the opulence and all facility was available to him, and it wasn't enough. He became attached to a very innocent deer in a very idyllic setting. Couldn't save him. So from those lessons learned, he realized there had to be something beyond all this. And not that we should necessarily neglect these processes. Again, you know, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have these samskaras that we make available so that parents can help their children become more and more elevated. But it's to help them to come to the point of pure devotional service. It's not just about acquiring a position in this life, and it's not just about elevation to the heavenly planets. It's not even necessarily about liberation. One can aspire for liberation in an impersonal sense. They try to attain sajuja mukti. But unless one comes to a point of devotional service, there is no shelter, there is no safety. Because unless one attains the devotional feet of Krishna, one will have to come back and take birth again in the cycle of birth and death. Assuredly. Because a soul by nature is meant to be engaged. We're not meant to be detached. You may detach yourself from a bad situation, but you'll have to be detached to something. That's the soul's nature. So Bharata Maharaj, Jada Bharata, kept himself aloof from his family. And we'll find that his bhakti, his realization cannot stay hidden. It's like a glowing jewel in a box. You know, he tried to keep it in a very simple box, but somehow through the cracks a little bit of light comes through. And it'll have to come out at some point. And he'll share a very wonderful realization later on in the story. But his father obviously was very anxious. His father cared for his son. You know, father cares for his sons. And if his son is very dependent, then you see the father becomes even more so. You know, if a child does well, you know, does well in school, does well in life, you're not worried about them. You think about them, you have affection for them. But if a child is in need, can't take care of themselves, it pulls the heart more. So his father had this type of affection for his son. So he wanted very much for him to learn all these processes, you know, all how to take care of himself, how to clean himself. That's the first thing a child learns, right? You know, first the baby's in diapers and the parent cleans them. And then the parent, you know, potty trains the child and teaches the child how to clean themselves. Couldn't even do that. Couldn't even do that simple task. So this is, I think we'll end here. Does anybody have any questions, comments, or realizations they'd like to share? Chetumai, do you have a...
Thank you for the nice class. I was wondering if you knew about the Shraddha ceremony. Is that something that is still performed regularly inside or outside of ISKCON?
Shraddha, yes. I actually held one here for my father when he passed away. We still hold those now and then. You know, a priest who's actually trained in holding samskars and things like that should be able to hold one. You know, Nimai Nitai conducted my father's, and you know, you offer some pinda, some offering, some oblations. And actually, it was a nice story because my father had remarried. And so my mother, who was in Florida at the time, did not want to come up for his memorial, not because she had any bad feeling about him, but she didn't want to create a disturbance with my stepmother. She said, you know, maybe not so appropriate for me to come up. So when she came up to Boston to visit, it was around the time that was appropriate for me to hold the Shraddha ceremony for my father, so she was here for that too. So my family was here, and it was a beautiful experience. You know, it's basically you're offering the departed some Krishna prasad. and you're asking for a blessing. So wherever they are, wherever their soul had made, and because where do people go? Well, it depends on where they were in their lifetime. And we don't always know people's internal life. So, but wherever they've gone to, this Shraddha ceremony will help them become more elevated, whatever situation they're in. Maybe they're not embodied yet, and they need to find a place to go. So maybe you can help them aspire for something higher than just taking birth again according to their karma. So, yeah, so this, all these, even the Garbhadana samskar can still be conducted, it just hasn't been. So therefore, it's understood that in the age of Kali, the Brahmana system, the Brahmana caste, will diminish because nobody will follow that samskar. If you don't follow that samskar, then really everything afterwards is just you're playing catch up. So it said in the age of Kali, by nature we're all born Shudra. We're all born Shudra. So, but the process of Krishna consciousness is so powerful. Chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees, studying Bhagavad Gita, this process is so powerful that even though we're not necessarily born as Brahmana quality, one can cultivate Brahmana qualities of truthfulness, of mercy, austerity, cleanliness. You know, all these qualities are there because they're actually natural expressions of the soul. But how covered one is. It's like if you have a projector and you have a yellow filter, and in front of that place a red filter. Then you place a blue filter. The light comes through, it will be very dim. But if you clean away those filters, that light becomes
So the soul by nature is compassionate because it's reciprocal. The soul will connect with other souls in a very pure way. So the Vaishnava by nature is sarva dukkha dukkhi. We have no problems unto ourselves, but we feel compassion for those who are suffering. Their suffering becomes our suffering. So that quality of kripa, of compassion that's there in Brahmana, is also there in Vaishnava. So, anyway, does that answer your question? Okay. So we'll end here. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Thank you for joining us this morning. It's a great pleasure. It's a real pleasure to have you all here.
This is your first time. Well, she's here from Bali.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yesterday was the festival Galunga, which is very similar to the Vedic Vaishnavite culture.
Oh, yeah, very nice culture. My wife lived there for some time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let me turn off the recorder. But yeah, she was. She is an artist, and she had received a. You know, like a scholarship to live in Bali for some time. So she was there for like 6 months or something like that. Yeah. She loved it. She, for her, not just the place is beautiful, but the people, the culture. She just thought, and she had no familiarity with Vedic culture or anything like that. So it was all new to her. And everything, just the way, the hospitality, she thought, she just had such a wonderful experience. She still talks about it very fondly. So will you be living in America, or will you be just visiting? Oh, you will be. Okay. Well, if you're here, look for me, because my wife, I'll introduce you to my wife. I think she really would enjoy. She'd really. Yeah. And we also have some friends here too, like there's some devotees who also lived in Bali for some time, and we have a friend who's actually Balinese, and she's a yoga teacher, and she wrote with me.